Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to the James Bond Hour. It is Thursday night. That means this is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with my charming, lovely, and oh so vivacious co-host, Bob Brill.
Wow. I thought you were going to go to Bobby on that one.
Stunning, huh? And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell, who is our traveling co-host in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Say hello,
Bobby.
Good evening. There you go. I want to get into this show tonight. So we have a really great show lined up for and a really great author lined up for you tonight. So we're not going to mess around a whole lot. So let's get started. Creative Edge. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients, needs, and goals, and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets, and that'd be us, and organizations to meet clients' goals. Creative Edge, your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson is the publicist, and a great guy is he. And, of course, we now have Out West coming up, so Bobby Jean, take it.
Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, including rugs and general merchandise. National brands are very favorites include Rockamount Ranchwear, The Scully Leather Company, American West Handbags, just to name a few. And we love our Writer's Block listeners. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com and enter code WB100 and you'll receive $10 off your order. And if you would like to speak with me directly, give us a toll-free call at 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out west.
Oh my God, you had to add that, didn't you? I love that. I love that phrase. I've known Bobby Jean since 2009, I think.
Yeah, since you guys
were.
Yeah, and you've been saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. You have typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter. You've sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, I'm done. Nah, not even close. Sure, you've finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have that book completed. Know what it takes? Know what it takes, Bob? It takes editing.
Rewriting and editing.
Rewriting. More editing and more rewriting. And Laura, I'm sure that you will agree with all of this. It takes formatting, proofreading, more rewriting. And then if you're lucky, you can devise a cover and you can probably turn that manuscript in and get some printed. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, and I mean a fairly small investment, we can do all of the above for you and get that finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing and help you get some dollars in your pockets. We're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. And having learned it, we can share and help you get that book of which you can be proud. So why not give us a call at 805-795-3165 or email me at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com. Or rpalinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com. Just send us a manuscript and let us navigate the rest, and we'll let you know how it's going to turn out and whether we're really going to be interested in doing it. But most of the time we are. Okay, our guest tonight is right now she's sitting in a house in Hawaii.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Laura Lovett, actually, that is okay. Laura Lovett was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, and received her PhD in psychology from the University of Calgary in 2005. Her love of writing began at an early age when she could create and draw characters, telling stories to herself as she drew. An accomplished author in the academic and business world, Laura pursued her love of creating writing to pen her first novel, Losing Cadence. A psychological thriller, Losing Cadence was written over many years as Laura juggled school and work and family, but she made time to pursue her passion for writing. Laura is a psychologist. Excuse me. Wow. That's no good. Psychologist and entrepreneur, currently running practices in the areas of career and leadership development and distributed workplaces. She was nominated and selected as a Distinctive Woman in Canada in 2013. Laura also enjoys teaching at the University of Calgary and has been an adjunct professor of psychology since 2010. Laura lives in Canada with her husband, or Calgary with her husband, three children, and dog Ghost. She loves playing squash, traveling, and reading, as well as her view of the Rocky Mountains as the snow was falling on her hot tub. Oh, my God. How visual is that?
And she's in Hawaii.
And she's now in Hawaii. So please, welcome to the Writer's Block, Laura Lovett.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you know what? It's our pleasure, truly. It's not often we get somebody of your caliber around here. So, I mean, you know, here, Bob and I sit, we're like, you know, we have BAs.
I don't even have that.
Oh, BA. That's quite an accomplishment.
I went to HQ University.
Oh, did you?
Or HK, actually, Hard Knocks.
Ah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, it took you years to write Losing Cadence, and you managed to keep it all together, and it actually flowed like you wrote it in 3 months, 4 months. So, first
Thank
of all,
you.
How did you do that?
Well, I chipped away at it over many years, but I think the way that I did it was every time I went back to it after taking a gap of time away from it, I'd have to start from the beginning and read it all over again, and then it would go through a whole bunch more edits because I always figured I could make it better each time.
Sure.
So I think that's what tied it together, having to constantly edit it, and it probably took 10 times as more work as the second book because it was spread out over so much time.
So when did you start this, and when did you feel you were ready to submit it to the publisher? How many years?
I 8 years.
Eight.
Holy crap!
And I, you know, and knowing, you know, what it takes to stop and go back and stop and go back, and I was intrigued by the fact that when you said the fact that okay, you had to go back and reread it. Was that because you basically had to refresh your memory as to what you read, or maybe you couldn't remember, or you just wanted to change direction?
Just refresh my memory, right, and get the feeling back of where I had left off. So, yeah, it was a very inefficient way to write a book. But the second book I ended up writing in 18 months because readers wanted to hear what happened because my first one ends on a cliffhanger, and I was able to do that start to finish in 18 months.
Well, I wasn't able to get through the entire second book, but I got far enough into it to know that Richard White is a rat fink. I was going to say the other word.
A tortured soul. Yeah,
you know what?
A tortured soul. I like the way that you said that better. Yeah.
Oh, he was a rat. I mean, good Lord, this guy. You know, most sane people would just let go, and I think that's the operative word, most sane people. Well, Richard apparently is not very sane, and he's not going to let go. So far, we've got 22 years under our belt with this guy, and he has not let it go yet.
So you have to see how that Finding Sophie ends and tell me what you think.
Well, I'll finish it, and then I'll email you and let you know what I think.
Well, I'm at the point in Finding Sophie where Leo has gotten an idea to get on a helicopter and leave the great white. So that's where I am. I can't wait to get back to finishing this book. You are doing twists and turns that leave me gasping. And that was true in book one as well. But you really have created a masterpiece of thriller psychology here in book two. Congratulations.
Oh, Bobby, thank you. That makes me, yeah. I'm blushing right now. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And my film producer, who I just signed with in the last couple of weeks, she describes the books as Sleeping with the Enemy meets Gone Girl.
So, I can see that.
And I was inspired by that movie, Sleeping with the Enemy, and also by Stephen King's Misery when I was a teenager. And then, of course, Gone Girl's much more recent, but it really has kind of the twists and turns of Gone Girl. But I hadn't read Gone Girl until after I finished Losing Cadence.
You know, when I first picked up the book, I told Bobby Jean this yesterday when I was talking to her. And when I first picked up the book, I saw the title and it's, you know, Losing Cadence. And I thought, oh, great. It's, you know, it's a book about some guy marching and trips over his own feet. but then I got into the book and I realized that, oh, no, Cadence is a person. Okay. But then you have a daughter named Cadence.
I do. So I had my daughter. So it was funny. I ended up finishing the book during the last week of my pregnancy with my daughter. Because that was the only time I had to finish it. Because I could put my feet up and stuff. Because I'm a business owner and, you know, a busy mother,
sure,
a business owner and whatnot. I said, I'm going to finish this book because when I have a newborn and then I have my two sons, I'm not going to have time to finish it. So I better darn well do it. So I did. I did it in my bed. I got a little laptop lap desk for me and I finished that book. And that's why there's the, you know, writing about the baby and whatnot. I was in that baby mothering mode. So there you go.
You know, one of the things that occurred to me, you said it took you 8 years to write it. It took Jim one day to read it.
I'm right there with him. One day to read the first one. And yeah.
I got to ask you, what do you think when somebody says that to you? Like, wow, I put 8 years of this and somebody reads it in one day.
Oh, no, I'm honored. I think it's a real, it's a huge compliment when someone reads a book quickly.
Well, especially when
it means they can't put it down. And one of my goals is to entertain. I want to entertain people, and I want to be an entertaining storyteller, and I want it to be on the big screen where people want to see that movie and they're at the edge of their seats.
Exactly.
So there you go.
Well,
I appreciate that.
That's what I told Bobby Jean yesterday. I said I didn't even get out of my pajamas until I finished this book yesterday. It was amazing. I would not stop reading it.
Well, and if I can just jump in here quickly, just to say that when Jim and I were talking yesterday, one of the things that I also said is this, because our main guy here, Richard White, is so incredibly wealthy, you are able to provide these really opulent landscape,
yes,
where all the activity happens. And you take us to several different landscapes. We're in Montana and we're in San Francisco and we're in a beautiful private island that he's bought, I think, in the Caribbean or off Jamaica. But each one of the spaces that we're in, you describe the elegance, the white furnishings and the red roses. And at the same time, we have this terror that goes on underneath it all, and I can't help but think how gorgeous that'll be on the big screen, but also how terrifying it really is, because when we think of abduction and we think of those types of things, we tend to think, you know, the gritty alleyway, the downstairs basement, the
right,
you know, think Blue Bloods or CSI,
right,
or, you know,
the mattress with no mattress cover and oil stains, and
think of the terror that can go on in such gorgeous surroundings, you know.
Now, Bobby Jean, I don't know if you got the same feeling I did, but all the white, the white rooms and the white carpets and the white polished flooring, the wood flooring and all of that. Did white become an evil color for you? Because it sure did me.
Even his name.
I know. I didn't want to see anything white anymore, you know.
Yeah.
I said, no, no more white, no more white. You know, make your pages brown. Do something.
When, That's hilarious. I did write it picturing the scenes, right, which I do think will adapt nicely to a screenplay because, yeah, they describe the setting. And I think a lot of crimes and, you know, emotional and mental illness and stuff do go on in opulent settings. And I think we too often forget that. Yeah, I hope the books can raise awareness around the discussion on mental health and controlling relationships and even abduction, right?
Right, right. Well, I think the three of us, our hosts of the Writer's Block, can readily agree that I mean, we're all poor and we're all stable because of it.
Speak for yourself. Well, Laura, I did ask you sort of a double-barreled question, and that was, number one, did you go into this with an idea that you were going to target a screenplay? And number two, are they going to let you, if they talk to you about writing the screenplay, or is someone else going to do that?
Okay, so that's two questions. First of all, when I wrote it, I imagined it as a movie. So that was my hope and my dream. I don't know if it was, I guess it was an intention, right? But, I mean, this is all new to me, but it was definitely a dream that I had, and I talked about a lot whenever I talked about the book, and whenever someone would read it, they would say that they could picture it as a movie. And then secondly, I don't know how to write a screenplay. I'd have to take a course in it. I'm sure I could learn. I just don't have the time. So my film producer is actually going to have it made into a screenplay on that end. So hopefully that takes place soon.
Cool. Yeah. Are they shopping it in Canada or the States or both?
She's from the States.
Oh, okay.
Oh, very good.
And she sees both books as a single film or a series, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I jump in with another question, gentlemen, or were one of you ready to go?
No,
of course. Go ahead.
You go. You go, girl.
Because I have had the pleasure of getting into Sophie, we learn, you share a lot more about Richard's background, and so we get to, not that he's sympathetic exactly, but we get to see him as he recalls his youth. When you were writing book one, did you already have all of Richard's backstory kind of in your mind, or did it was it revealed to you as you read wrote book two?
Well, that's
two?
A good question, Bobby.
That's a great question. It was revealed to me when I was writing book two, because I'm the type of writer that hears the story as I tell it.
Okay.
So I don't plan it all ahead and map it out. That's what I do for work. That's not as exciting. I like hearing the story unfold.
So you let your character Richard White dictate his backstory to you?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. We have a lot of writers tell us that. So.
Uh-huh. Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting. And book one, we mostly got in the first person. There is a scene with the chef early on in the kitchen, and,
right.
and we get to kind of see something happening kind of through his eyes. But I notice in book two, we are seeing through multiple perspectives, and I just had that question. How is it to write first person versus... what is that, third person, and mm-hmm. and about how your choice to kind of mix the perspective.
Yeah, and you jump back and forth. You do it well.
Oh, thank you. I just I went with it based on what story needed to be told and from whose perspective, I guess. So hopefully it wasn't distracting. It sounds like the jumping back and forth worked. I know that people liked it in the first book, how I jumped ahead.
Mm-hmm.
10 years back and forth. And then the second book, I just felt like I had to have different perspectives because mm-hmm. it was taking place in different settings. And in order to tell that backstory, I certainly needed to have that other perspective in there.
We have to know about Leo and stuff, right?
Right. Well, and you also had a lot more main characters in the second book than you do in the first.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you brought in a lot of people. I mean, Kale and I forgot.
Peter
Sophie?
And Peter and Leo and
Peter
Owen.
And Leo.
Yeah, it's.
See, I was thinking Peter and Leo were the same guy. But they're not.
Oh. Well, the thing is, to run a mega yacht, you need a staff that size.
Oh, yeah.
So I tried to pare it down as much as I could, but it needed to be realistic. And the more people I talked to in the yacht industry, I really learned that it's quite a vessel, right? It's almost
300
like
and some odd feet.
A cruise ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so and then I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, I need another character. I need another name. What should I name the character? So I would name the characters after people that would help me with the research. So... Owen is a helicopter expert, and he travels around the world being an expert mechanic on helicopters. So that's why there's Owen, for example, as one of the characters.
There you go.
And that brings up the question regarding, may I ask how old the real-life Cadence is?
My daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, my daughter just turned 8.
Okay. What does she think of the book being named after her?
She probably isn't ready yet.
Well, I don't think she's ready. Yeah, but I don't mean that. But just the fact that, hey, Mom, you named the character after me. Can I read it?
I mean,
it?
This book is not rated PG.
has she raised that question to you? I'm sure she has, right?
Oh, yeah. She's curious, but she's young enough that she doesn't really get it. Right, she's just a little kid, so she doesn't try to read it, or she's not that interested, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I think she will be in a few years. And my son is 13, and he's certainly interested. But I said he can't read it till he's 15 or 16.
No, 20.
Keep it out of his hands.
I would sneak it and read it for my parents, wouldn't you?
Because I have to tell you, I mean, a younger adolescent reading that book would probably scare him to death.
I know.
Well, I mean, you know, that stuff like that happens. And, you know, and we're telling a story about somebody being stalked for 10 years and then abducted for 3 months. I mean, holy crap. That if I was 12, I'd be scared. It would have bothered me. Maybe not.
Well, you're making me think, Jim, that I should lock the books up in the house. Nah. Right now they're sitting on shelves.
Leave them out, Laura. What the hell?
Well, no,
I saw on your Facebook page that you're involved in an upcoming event that has to do with protecting your family from abduction. Did I see that?
Correct.
On your?
Yeah.
No, tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
Sure, Bobby. So I was introduced to Conroy Cantor, and she's a film producer who has signed with me. And her last movie was called Trafficked, starring Ashley Judd and Patrick mm-hmm. Duffy and others. And so what happened was I got introduced to her through someone that is a mutual connection to both of us. And she was actually in Calgary for a visit. And so I got sent the link to her film Trafficked, and I said to my husband, we have to watch this because I'm meeting this producer and I want to make sure that I've watched the movie. And I could not stop watching it until late at night. It just had me on the edge of my seat, and in a way that it just moves you to action. You just can't help but be moved to try and make a difference on this horrific $100 billion industry of sex trafficking.
Right.
So the movie is about three women. And they're all, one is from Nigeria, one India, and one California, and they're all kidnapped into the same Texas brothel. And it is just a horrific story. However, Conroy launched the film to the United Nations, and it was the second movie ever to launch in front of 400 delegates there. The other movie was Hotel Rwanda. So it's along those lines, right? And she's trying to make a difference with it, and she says, most producers just go from one film to another, but she keeps going back to Trafficked, and she's really promoting it all over the world and trying to raise awareness and educate kids on how to avoid trafficking, so in high school. And so she has a charity around it, and I said, well, why don't I do an event? Because I'm just passionate about making a difference here. So that's what the Not On My Watch event is all about.
Got it. Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, we took the angle about how to avoid abduction when you're traveling internationally, because a lot of us do travel. And Kim Howe, K.J. Howe, is another author with the same publicist of me.
Yeah, we've had her on the show.
Specializes in...
mm-hmm. She's been on the show.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
There you go. She specializes in kidnap and ransom, so she's part of this
panel
as
Yes,
well.
She does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
travel safety, right?
And yep.
So I thought if we can educate the public, raise money for charity, you know, gain more exposure for the books, but more importantly, just make a difference, that's why I'm doing it.
Well, it's amazing. You're to be applauded.
Well, you know, it's an important subject, especially right now, because it's such a huge problem, and everything from sex trafficking to, I mean, what we're seeing just this last week in Pennsylvania with the Catholic Church and
right.
the police there, you know, and it's and you talked about mental health too, so you've kind of got not only just a good story to tell, but a story that entangles possibility of so many lives, and I'm just kind of wondering. Your academia, a couple of questions there. One, what do you teach, and does that relate to anything along those lines?
That's a good question. Funny enough, my area of psychology is not around mental health. It's around workplace and career. But in fact, mental health comes into work, right? I mean, you can't separate human beings and human emotional challenges from work, right? I mean, everything overlaps in some way, but I'm definitely more of an expert in, like, management, leadership, highly effective teams, toxic workplaces, careers, things like that. So that's what I'm a thought leader on, but I definitely have been exposed to my fair share of seeing mental health issues arise in life and at work. And, you know, whether it's in family or friends or I've just been exposed to so much. And I think I'm fairly good at explaining human behavior because as psychologists, we try to find lots of different words and nuances and adjectives to describe what we're seeing in humans and human dynamics. And I think that helped me with the books.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and when due to the fact that you are in academia, I know a lot of agents, they love the fact that authors, just because of, I guess it's probably organizational skills and stuff like that. Did you find it easier to find an agent because of the academic background?
No, I didn't. I found it it's very difficult to find an agent. So I ended up being an indie author.
Yeah. Cool. There's nothing the matter with that, incidentally.
No, no.
I left you speechless.
No, well, we were kind of surprised.
Well, you know,
it's great.
It's funny.
It's great quality, and it's actually a really good question because I decided to go indie. And I think what I've learned since is that the best way to get an agent is to go to conferences and meet them face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I was doing that, I was already independently published with Losing Cadence. And
sure.
The response I was getting was, we love the sound of your story, but you've already released it. It's too late, and agents don't pick up an author mid-series.
No, they don't.
But we love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard some agents actually expressing interest. So I'm back on the wagon of trying to get an agent to pick up the project because I think it has tremendous potential. And there's only so much you can do as an independent author in terms of reach. And I think I do me and my team do a good marketing job, and Mickey Mickelson's amazing with Creative Edge. I think an agent would help me get to the next level with the U.S. market especially.
Mm. Well, especially since the fact that now you've got a producer who's very interested, who's done some films, and agents smell blood in the water when it comes to money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So something that doesn't have anything to do with Cadence, it probably is an agent's going to be knocking on your door, you know. Or sniffing around your backyard.
Well, I appreciate that. I really respect your opinion. So if you have any thoughts on that, I appreciate it. I think I'd be pretty darn good to work with, but it's tough to get an agent, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you're a pretty darn good guest. So hang tough for just a second. We have to do a commercial, and we'll be back to you in about 30 seconds. Don't go away.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You betcha. And, of course, now we have to do our little get for Russ. That's not playing. Why isn't it not playing? There we go. You're leaving on vacation. You're turned off. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. But what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. So All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And I'm sure they'll be happy to hear from you. That's Russ Avison and Karen, and they'll I'm sure they'll answer the phone. 524-1100, area code is 805. So when your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better. Well, we all know. It was the dog's. So there you go. And
I was going to ask you if you wanted me to bark when you...
Well, you could have, but then you'd have ruined my intro. Okay, it's 7:30. You're listening to LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. We are hosting tonight a writer from Canada who is just terrific, Laura Lovett. She is her initial book, Losing Cadence, is a smash. It's just a dynamite story. And her second book, which came out, how long ago did it come out after the first one, Laura?
It came out about 18 months after the first
one. Okay, about 18 months later, which is called Finding Sophie, which is a sequel to Losing Cadence. So we've lost Cadence, now we found Sophie. And you can blame Richard White for all of it.
Dastardly person.
So let me ask you, Laura, now that we know that you're a busy lady... You're an entrepreneur, and you've got all kinds of things going on in your life, three kids, a dog, a husband, and a house in Calgary. How do you find time to write?
Well, I think you don't find time. You make pockets of time. And the way that I did it for Finding Sophie was I set a goal that I needed to have this book within 18 months. And so, which means I needed to write it within a year because the whole editing process and publishing and whatnot takes a while. Mm-hmm. And I just blocked out times where I could write without distractions, which meant sometimes going away on a writing weekend, having a Saturday afternoon where my husband would take the kids out to a movie. I'd also write when the kids were in bed at night for a couple of hours. I found if I could have at least a couple of hours, I could get a good chunk done. Anything less than that is difficult. But I'd say I had a lot of energy around it so that when I sat down, I was able to just go versus writer's block and whatnot because I knew I had to tell the story and it had to be fast-paced and I had a limited amount of time to do it. So... the way you get things done is you ask a busy person, I guess.
Well,
so I think my advice to people is if you have too much time, that can be a problem. That can breed perfectionism and procrastination.
Oh, I was just going to say, or laziness. Mm-hmm. That's been my problem before.
Not lazy.
Bobby Jean, since our guest brought it up on her own, and I'm sure you caught that, would you like to ask the question?
She opened the door. So, of course, on this show, one of the things, Laura, that we always love to talk about besides the process is whether or not you experience a writer's block. Maybe you believe in it or you don't. If you do get it or you get yourselves in a blind alley, how do you get around it?
Well, I went on this writer's retreat called The Haven in Montana, and it was a really good... I learned a lot from that mentor there, Laura Munson. She's a best-selling author of memoirs. And so she taught us how to do writing prompts and how to get your ideas flowing. So she taught us about kind of the art of... It's better to get started on something, you know, even if it's just off on a tangent, than to just sit there stuck. It's almost like your creative juices need to start flowing. And it's okay if you go in the wrong direction. And I did. There was one point in Finding Sophie when I was submitting to my editor a couple of chapters at a time just to keep things moving because we knew we had a limited window. And I had a scene where There was a submarine involved, so there was Leo, you know, getting a submarine, stealing a submarine, and it. I spent time writing this whole chapter about the submarine and the scene and the intensity of it. And she said, "Laura, you're not James Bond. Like, this is too James Bond. This is not. It's too far fetched, right? Like, stealing a submarine is a big deal, right?
It's from the
Navy." And so she steered me away from that, and I had to delete the whole chapter. But it's okay, right? It's better to have written that and kept things moving and momentum going, because it helped me with the other angle I took, which was a helicopter.
Well, you know, don't throw that writing away, because you might be able to use that submarine in another book.
Yeah, you never know, right?
No, you never know.
All you got to do is go to Disneyland, ride a submarine. You figure it out in about 10 minutes, right?
I used to love those.
Laura, for any authors out there, is there a book or two on the writing process that you have kind of used as your textbook, and what would that be?
I would say most definitely Stephen King on writing is a really great book. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really respect his work, and I really love The Stand and Misery. And I mean, he's written so many great books, right? And his book on writing really talks about the power of less is more, and getting to the point. And being a psychologist, we're plagued with verbosity, so we use way too many words to describe human behavior, and my editor had to cut out so many words from my first book, right? I mean, I would describe Richard in one sentence using three adjectives and lots of adverbs, and so Stephen King taught me, you know, no, you just got to get right to the point. Less is more. Show, don't tell. And then my other Bible was this Haven writing retreat, right, where Laura Munson sat me down and said, you're telling way more than you're showing. You need to do scene, the power of scene, right? So when I was writing Finding Sophie, I started it at the Haven writing retreat, which is, I'd really recommend it. It's actually a beautiful ranch in Montana. And
do we lose you?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. We can't have lost you. Did we lose you?
I think we did.
I think we did.
Is she calling back?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Oh, there she is. Nope. Nope. Oh,
well, I'll just whistle Dixie then.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead and whistle Dixie, and I'll see if I can get her back.
While you're calling, it was interesting that I've heard of that being a fabulous place, and of course it's in Montana, and we all know how much of the first book takes place in Montana. So.
Right.
it's so important. One of the things she was pointing out is, based on the Stephen King book, the fact that, you know, less is more. And show rather than tell. And that's something that a lot of writers just, you know, I think she spent a lot of time talking about the description of Richard. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good. Obviously, it worked for her because the book flows.
Laura, did we give you back?
Oh, well. I guess she's...
Well... It's not acceptable. Oh, well, it's not good.
It's a deep subject.
I know.
And I'm not going to complete the thought.
All right, let's try this here.
But
please enter your remote access code.
Oh, shut up.
But anyway, talking about Stephen King, King, so much of his stuff translates to the screen in such a fantastic way, is because it is tight writing. It is tight story. And, you know, he does show a lot. Like, you take The Green Mile, for instance. That is a story that takes place over a few weeks.
Guess what?
You got her back?
She's calling my cell phone.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Hey, Pat, you're in?
Would this be you? I'll tell you what, I'll call you back on your cell phone.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay.
But so Stephen King stuff does translate so much, and that's why he's had so many films, you know, stuff. And I mean, a lot of those are just short stories. You know,
I mean,
I think Shawshank, I think, was a short story. I could be wrong about that, but
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. So he wrote a lot of short stories that were turned into full feature-length film.
Okay, let's see if we can get her back here.
But
well, and another point that she makes, although she did go the indie route, she definitely had a first-rate editor working with her on.
Yeah, Laura, you back?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yes, she did have a good editor.
I was talking, and I kept talking, and then I paused, and there was silence.
Oh, yeah, it's because all of a sudden we heard a big click, and you were gone. It was like, man, we must have really pissed her off.
Sorry.
It's all right. Well, we were talking about Montana and The Haven, I think, right before we lost you.
Right.
And, of course, we recognize the first book takes place so much of it in Montana. So we knew there had to be a Montana connection for you.
Yep.
Yeah, we had a summer cabin there for 9 years. So I wrote a lot of the book there. Both books, actually.
Oh,
I just found a lot of inspiration there. It was just a beautiful setting.
It's a gorgeous place to write. It's a beautiful, beautiful country
really
out there.
Rugged and lots of nature. And it's just a beautiful big sky country.
Yep. And they got buffalo. They got bufflers all over out
what?
There. Buffalo. Buffler. my brother used to live in Missoula, and every time I'd go up to visit him, they had to take me to the buffalo ranch, you know, and they're like herds of buffalo everywhere. Yeah. It's like crazy.
Buffalo are great.
They're great, except you don't want to get around them.
No, that's true. They stink.
Yeah. Oh, they smell like big sheep. Anyway, so we've covered now everything about your writing, I guess, and any projects coming up besides getting this movie made?
That's my big project right now. So between that and the Not On My Watch event, and helping promote the trafficked movement, helping get my movie made or my series. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I have another idea for a book that I'm really excited about that is just percolating. Mm-hmm. But when I do write it, it will be really exciting to do the research around it and to tell the story. And I'm reading a book right now that is really inspiring to me and kind of along those lines in a way. So.
Well, do yourself a favor. Make sure it has a submarine in it.
Yeah, you've already got the chapter written.
You've already got the chapter with the sub in it, so you might as well go ahead and use it.
is the project you're talking about, I don't want you to reveal anything about it, but the project you're writing, is it more of along the lines of the same story, or is it something totally different?
Well, I have an idea for something different, sort of a historical romance. Based on my grandfather and a romance he had in World War One, so I'm reading a book right now by Kristen Hanna called The Nightingale, which is just a beautiful book. It's a bestseller, but it's set in World War Two. But I really like those kind of war romances, so we'll see. But I also like thrillers. And there may be another thriller involving Richard White. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Ah. Oh, so, okay. Go ahead, Rick.
You can always set your thriller in World War One. Why not?
Sure. There you go. Well, we read one that took place in World War One.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, just a few weeks
ago.
So what's on your nightstand to read for yourself, Laura?
Well, you can... So the Nightingale definitely is the one I'm reading right now. And I love K.J. Howe's books. I devoured both of those, The Freedom Broker and Skyjack. Mm-hmm. And then I've just met so many writers, right? So when you start going to these writers' conferences, mm-hmm, being mm-hmm. part of this creative edge community, you start having way too many books, and you want to read all of these books. It's like a kid in a candy store, right? And then because I have limited time, it's always hard to read as much as I want to, but vacation is a great time to do so, that's for sure. And my best childhood friend got remarried yesterday, or the day before, in Kona, Hawaii, so that's why I'm here for the wedding. And it's just been a really, really great place to read. Just gorgeous, right?
Well,
even though there's a volcano erupting, that's on the other side of the island.
Well, I found with Mickey as a publicist, I have never been interviewed so many times in my life as I have the last probably 4 or 5 months.
It's really?
Yeah. He keeps sending me these emails.
Yeah, he's great.
I got you scheduled here. Cool. So,
he's wonderful. He's just energetic and well connected.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
his energy always amazes me.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's just resourceful. He gets things done, right?
Does.
He's an example of, you ask the busiest person, and they get stuff done, right? Somehow they fit it in.
Well, you know, Mickey is we deal with a lot of, or Jerry does, who does all the booking. She does deals a lot with publicists from New York and some of the bigger publishing houses. And, you know, they don't like their writers talking to us directly until they're actually on the show. So we actually have no idea whether they're going to be on the show or not until we call. That was when we had John Sanford on, guys, if you remember that. We didn't know he was going to be on the show until that night. So if he answers his phone, we're in luck. And if not, I guess we talk about ourselves.
Well, we can do that. I mean, you know, we all have books we've written. So,
sure.
You know.
Well, it's been great having you, Laura. I wish we could spend another hour chatting, but unfortunately we're out of time. I hope that you will come back and join us again sometime. Just talk to Mickey and he'll talk to Jerry and we'll get you back book in here sometime next year.
Yeah, I would love that, and I think what you're doing is great. What a fun job you guys have to do this show.
Oh,
you must look forward to it.
It is fun. We do have to read a book a week, which can be a chore, but most of the time it's fun, and you know, you get to talk to some really cool people. Include yourself in that.
So, oh, thank you. It's like
sure.
You guys have a book club on steroids. You're a book club on steroids.
Right? Well, Bobby Jean is the only one that's not a writer. Bob and I are both writers.
Right.
So, and our my co-host on the fourth Thursday of the month is not a writer. He's a dog trainer, but he's a great interviewer. Bob and I have always writing questions that we like to ask.
Right, and Bobby Jean just devours everything.
She does. I mean, you know, she does it happily, if you can't tell.
Oh, I love it. It feeds my soul.
I
love it.
If you ever are having a bad day, call Bobby Jean.
At 2 in the morning.
Because, or 2 or 3 in the morning. She'll answer the phone, and she'll just be chirpy.
Yeah, well, she'll be up at 2 in the morning reading. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you can call me at 3 in the morning, and you probably get me working.
Exactly. So why don't you tell our audience where they can find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. So author, lauralovett.com. So love it with two T's.
Two T's.
And no E at the end.
Okay.
AuthorLauraLovett.com is my website, and I'm on Facebook as well as Author Laura Lovett, Instagram, Twitter, and I would love to connect with any of you.
Okay.
We have lots of contests and fun things going on the social media. So, again, I would love to connect at any time.
Well, we'll look forward to getting you rebooked back on the show, because you've just been a hoot to have on. So, by golly, maybe next time we'll talk to you and you'll be in Calgary.
Yes,
and that'll probably be in the winter.
More likely than Hawaii. I do not have a place here.
Another one of Mickey's writers was on the show one night. Oh God, who was she? The gal who had the drone looking at her through the window when she was writing.
The progeny. Yeah, yes. Tosca.
Tosca Lee.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God, that was funny.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So come up with good stories. We always love good stories. Okay. Well, thanks again for sharing your evening with us. And now I guess it's happy hour there in Hawaii, huh?
It is. Mahalo.
Well, it's definitely going to be happy hour here in Albuquerque now that I can get off the air.
There you go. Thanks again, Laura. Take care and stay in touch.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Laura Lovett. Great writer. Wonderful person.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Bob, you got an exciting thing coming up.
Yes, I do, actually. Coming up on the 27th, we're screening my latest short film, Sundown, the Western. And we're doing that at the El Cid Restaurant and Theater outside on the patio, coming up on the 27th
right.
at 8 o'clock. And so I'm real excited about that. People are starting to line up. We're getting some good response. And then shortly after that, I have actually a couple of days after that, I have a pitch meeting on the feature film. So we'll see where that goes. So
good.
I'm kind of excited about that, too.
Good.
Especially about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And our friend Eric Heisner and Al Brigas are both in the film.
It's 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, it's 10 minutes short.
Yeah. 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 Well, but I mean, I have some exciting news, possibly.
Cool.
That I don't know if I...
What is it, Jim?
Well, I don't know if I've told you this yet or not, okay. But I actually sent two of my books wound up in Suzanne DePass's office. She's a producer of Westerns.
Yeah.
And there would be Jonah Blue and Still Waters. Right. And so we're hoping that is eventually going to get on somebody's schedule.
I can't reach the machine over there, but...
Oh, here.
Yeah.
Let me do it for you.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Bobby Jean, thanks for coming in and having a great time with us. And golly, we'll just be talking to you next week, I guess. No,
two weeks after.
Next
yes,
week we have
Claire Fuller.
We have, mm-hmm. that's right, Claire Fullerton. Next week
Claire.
We have another one of Mickey's creative edge writers, Miranda O. She will be on with Russ and I. And golly, we just got our full schedule. This whole year's booked up.
Yeah.
I know.
Gary's doing a great job.
I know. She's doing a great job. Okay, for Bobby Jean Bell and Bob Brill and myself, Mr. Jim Christina, we thank you for listening. This is another Thursday night shot in the butt, and we are out of here.